bring the message for us.
Testing, 1, 2, okay, good. That was a long passage, right? But that's not even the end of it. Samson's story comprises of, I think, at least 4 chapters, or is it 5? 5 chapters in the book of Judges. So obviously his story is very, very important. Otherwise, the Bible would not contain such a long passage on his story. And his name is actually mentioned in Hebrews chapter 11 in the Hall of Faith. Remember, Hebrews 11 lists all the people of faith in the Bible examples of faith and the heroes of the faith. And Samson's name is being mentioned among one of 4 judges. So obviously his life story is very important. And I made sure that Pastor Matt would read the 2 chapters today because it is important. We need to learn from it. But before we jump into it, I just want to piggyback on what Pastor Matt said last week. Remember, that was Easter Sunday. He talked about Christ's resurrection, and what was his main point? Remember? He talked about the sufficiency of Christ, the fact that Jesus is the only one who can fully satisfy us and fulfill us. Apart from Christ, there is no satisfaction, there is no fulfillment. Jesus said, I am the bread of life. He who comes to me will not hunger, and he who believes in me will never thirst. Meaning that, in him only we can find fulfillment. Now, if this statement is true, do you believe that statement to be true? As believers, we should. Now, if this statement is true, then why is it that so many believers stumble on their journey of faith as if Jesus is not enough? What happened to Bill Hybel, who 2 years ago was exposed for sexual misconduct? Bill Hybel, if you've never heard of him, is a world-renowned pastor, author, an expert on leadership. I mean, he has leadership workshops all over the world, and I've attended a few of those. What happened to him? It seems like Christ was not enough. What happened to Ravi Zacharias, who last year, have you heard of Ravi Zacharias? Good. If you have not, he's a world-renowned apologist, author, an expert on religion. But last year, after his death from cancer, he also was exposed for sexual abuse. They had an independent law firm do some investigation because people accused him and some things came out. And the more they investigated, the more, it was so sad. So what happened to him? It seemed like Christ was not enough for him. So is Jesus' statement true? See, I'm only mentioning them, not to first to judge them, but because they are very well-known, world-renowned. So I'm mentioning them to point out to the fact that our Christian journey of faith is really a race. It is a race that we need to finish. So I'm pointing it out because Jesus made that statement. And it leaves us wondering, is Jesus' statement true? That if we come to him, we will be fulfilled. If we believe and trust him, we will be fulfilled. That statement is absolutely true. However, it is conditioned on us coming to him and believing and trusting him. As long as we come to him for satisfaction, as long as we believe him to satisfy us, we will be fulfilled. However, if we deviate from that, if we deviate from that, from coming to Christ and from trusting Him, then we will find ourselves unfulfilled, discontent, dissatisfied, and grappling for whatever we think might fill the void in us. Now, I don't really know, and no one will really know, all the facts of what happened to Hybel or Zacharias. You know, what caused them to betray their calling and abuse their tremendous God-given gifts? What transpired in their heart and soul that eventually led them to sexually exploit women for self-gratification? We don't need to research into that because the Bible has already given us the answers through the story of Samson. And that is why Samson's story is so important. Samson's story really gives us a glimpse into the condition, the depravity of the human condition. You know, I see a lot of similarities between Samson and Hybel or Zacharias. Samson had a calling. I remember when we, 2 weeks ago, I think, we first were introduced to Samson. Samson had a calling. He was set aside, from conception, to be a Nazarite, to be used by God. And then God gave him this tremendous gift, extraordinary physical strength, so that he could accomplish God's purposes and God's will in his life. However, in Judges chapter 14 and 15 that Pastor Matt just read, we see Samson's downward journey of catering to his flesh, his eyes, and his pride. In the same way, Hybel and Zacharias were called by God to lead his people. You know, they were set aside to answer his call, and they were given tremendous gifts. These were very gifted men to accomplish God's purposes and God's will. However, while Samson openly sinned against God, they kept their struggles secret. When I read Samson's story, I am reminded of the warning given to us in 1 John chapter 2, verses 15 to 16. You know, you can't see it, right? It's too small. It says here, "Do not love the world, nor the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, and the lust of the eyes, and the boastful pride of life, is not from the Father, but is from the world." Samson catered to his flesh, his eyes, and his pride, and that eventually led him to his chains, bondage, and his eyes being gouged out. But that's next week's message. For today, we just need to know that Samson's insatiable desire led him to his fall. Did Samson finish his race, his spiritual race? Well, we know he did because his name is mentioned in Hebrews 11. Did Hybel finish his race? Well, his race is not finished because Hybel is still alive. And I don't know whether he repented, whether he has gone through a healing process. So his journey is not over and his story is not over. Did Zacharias finish his race? I don't know. We don't know, and it is not our place to judge him. He died last year from cancer, and these things came out, but we don't know what transpired in his mind in his last day here on earth. So it is not for us to judge, and I don't know whether he finished his race. However, their stories, and especially Samson's story, serve as great warnings to all of us, to all of us. And I'm looking at you guys, most of you are so young. You're just beginning on your journey of faith. So you need to remember Samson's story as grave warning that there is a race for you to run, And you need to be careful. Because if you're not, if you let your guards down, you will stumble. And you might not finish the race. Let us embrace God's love rather than try to satisfy the lust of the flesh. Let us embrace God's grace rather than try to satisfy the lust of the eyes. Let us embrace God's mercy rather than try to satisfy the pride of life. First, the lust of the flesh will not satisfy us. God's love will. So embrace God's love rather than try to satisfy the lust of the flesh. You know, chapter 14 begins with Samson went down to Timnah. Timnah is where Samson sees a beautiful Philistine woman and decides that he wants to marry her. Now, Samson himself is from a town called Zora. Zora is his home. And I looked on biblical maps, and Zora, or Timnah, is actually west of Zora and a little bit further north of Zora. So for Samson to go from Zora to Timnah, he would have to go up to Zora. Then why did the Bible say Samson went down to Timnah and repeated that three times within a few short verses? Could it be that Timnah is where Samson began his journey downward into sin, which eventually led to his destruction? Instead of coming to God, Samson went down to Timnah looking for love. If you look at Samson's love life, you pretty much could summarize it as Samson looked for love in all the wrong places with all the wrong women. If you think about it, the lust of the flesh is really lusting after love in all the wrong places. Being raised as a Nazarite, for sure, Samson knew that God forbade the Israelites from intermarrying with the people of the land. Yet he decided that this is exactly what he will do. While verse 4 tells us that it was of the Lord, for he was seeking an occasion against the Philistines, God did not move in Samson's heart to do this. He merely allowed Samson's sinful desire to play itself out. What moved Samson to sin was his own lust of the flesh. You see, Samson, as we will see throughout his story, had a fascination with sex. I once had a seminary professor who began the class by saying, "Sex is not everything. Sex is not everything." I couldn't understand why he said that at the time. No, that was 20 years ago. However, the more and longer I observe the world, the more this sentence is making sense to me, especially here in America. We have made sex into everything. We have made sex into such an idol. We have elevated its status and importance so much that it seems like it permeates every fiber of our society. Think about it. Now, we condemn sexual abuse, but then we condone adultery and promiscuity. We decry sex trafficking, but indulge in pornography. People now talk about pornography as if it is actually a cultural accepted norm. We fight against sex crimes, but we promote them through our entertainment industry. We mourn all the broken marriages caused by infidelity, but we celebrate sexual revolution and sexual liberation. Do you see all the ironies here? What is this all about? What is it with our fascination or obsession with sex? You know, at the core of our fascination with sex is really a desire for love that only intimacy with God can fulfill. Let me repeat. At the core of our fascination with sex is really a desire for love that only intimacy with God can fulfill. Think about this sentence. The first time I heard some version of this statement was from Tim Keller a while back, and I thought this makes so much sense. You see, God created us to have an intimate love relationship with Him. And that love and intimacy is really fostered through our conversation with Him in prayer as we pray, through fellowshipping with Him and His Spirit as we meditate upon His Word, through worshiping Him whenever we come before Him in humility and submission. It is through relating with Him as we walk in obedience to accomplish His will and His purposes in our lives. And that intimacy with God is really exclusive, meaning that it is meant to be enjoyed only with God. Now, God also created sex to imitate that intimacy, but now between man and a woman. And just like our intimacy with God is exclusive, sexual intimacy is also to be exclusive within the boundaries of marriage. When our intimacy with God is being neglected for whatever reason, busyness, stress, sin, it leaves a huge void, emptiness, and dissatisfaction in us. And the tragedy is when we use sex, which, remember, only imitates intimacy with God, when we use sex to try to fill that void, it does not work. It does not work. It only makes us hungry for more. Do you follow? Do you follow? Nod, at least, so I know you're awake. Do you follow? No wonder the greatest commandment is for us to love God with all our heart, soul, and strength. We need to be awakened to the lie of the enemy. No, the enemy has successfully lied to us, telling us that sex is everything. Sex is not everything. To love God with all our hearts, soul, and strength. That's everything. That's everything. So embrace God's love rather than try to satisfy the lust of the flesh. Second, the lust of the eyes will not satisfy us. God's grace will. So embrace God's grace rather than try to satisfy the lust of the eyes. Samson's lust of the flesh really stems from his lust of the eyes. The two are somewhat, you know, interconnected. Whatever Samson saw and liked, Samson wanted and got. Verse 2 in chapter 14, speaking to his parents, he said, "I saw a woman in Timnah, one of the daughters of the Philistines, so now therefore get her for me as a wife." Then in verse 7, "So he went down and talked to the woman, and she looked good to him." Samson saw and liked, so Samson wanted and he got, even though he knew that it would be going against God's law. Then in verse 8, the same thing happened. When he went down to Timnah, a lion attacked him. Samson being Samson, he tore the lion with his bare hands as one would tear a young goat. Then in verse 8, it says, when he returned later to take her, meaning the woman, he turned aside to look at the carcass of the lion. And behold, a swarm of bees and honey were in the body of the lion. What did Samson do? Samson saw and liked, so he wanted and he took. In verse 9, so he scraped the honey into his hands and went on eating as he went. Again, Samson acted against God's law, which clearly forbade anyone consecrated from touching a carcass because it would make him unclean. And eating food that has touched a carcass, making it unclean, is also forbidden. But Samson wanted to satisfy the lust of his eyes, so he disregarded God's law. The lust of the eyes is something that we all struggle with from childhood. Have you ever seen kids fight over toys? I saw it first, it's mine. No, I saw it first. To a certain degree, you know, we all have done that. We saw and liked, so we wanted and got. And sometimes at the cost of disregarding God's will. However, we all know that feeding the lust of the eyes will never satisfy us. It only makes us wanting more, hungrier. You know, I love cars, and as a boy, I would often stare at beautiful cars parked on the street and pretend that I was driving them. And I would pretend being inside the car and drive. So naturally, when I got my driver's license, I had a dream car in mind. Somehow, I started seeing that car everywhere I went. My best friend at the time happened to own such a car. After I married Amy, who, as a lawyer, was going to earn a lot of money, so I thought, my dream was that one day she would surprise me with a small gift box on my birthday. Then I would come home and she would say, surprise, and give me the box, and inside would be a key, and she would bring me to the front of our house, and there would be parked a brand new BMW. That was my dream. Then God called us to China, so I gave up on that dream in order to respond to his call. For the first 7 years in China, a bicycle and public transportation was my mode of transportation. And at that time, there weren't too many cars on the road, and especially nice cars. So lusting after cars with my eyes was not my problem. Even after all of a sudden, everyone, it seems like, started having cars. And then, you know, if you lived in China, you know, BMW and Mercedes, Audi, Porsches, and even Ferrari became ubiquitous on the road. Really. But I was still okay. No, I looked and I liked, but I didn't have the desire to want and to get, and first of all, I couldn't afford it. So I didn't have that desire. Then the last couple of years driving around in the States, I found my attitude slowly changing. I started looking and liked, no? But then I also started wanting. Will it be a sin if I bought a BMW? Whether I can afford one is another question. But if I bought one, will I be sinning? Ultimately, it comes down, you know, to my heart. Why would I be buying a BMW? Is it to satisfy the lust of the eyes? Will it distract me from God's call upon my life? Will it distract other people seeing me driving a BMW from bearing testimony to them? Now, don't go out to the parking lot after church and look for BMWs and ask, you know, who's driving this BMW? You know, and if you came to church driving a BMW, you don't have to be all self-conscious about it. Because ultimately, it is not about the brand or the model of car you're driving. You could be driving a Honda, which is what I'm driving now, and still have a problem with the lust of the eyes. It is an issue of the heart. It is an issue of the heart, not the kind of car you're driving. Besides, you and I know that it is not just cars, is it? How many of us have bought toys that we never really used, only because we saw and liked, and so we wanted and got? How many of us have clothes in our closet that we never wear? Clothes or shoes that we never wear only because we saw and liked, so we wanted and got? Do you have garages cluttered with stuff that you never used because you saw and liked, so you wanted? Was that a confession? So you wanted and got. You know, it's like a sickness. It's really like a sickness. And that sickness is really called entitlement. We feel entitled, so we indulge into the lust of the eyes. Now, I worked so hard for it. I earned it. I deserve it. I need it to make me feel good about myself. I am entitled to it. Yet the lust of the eyes will never, never satisfy us. The remedy to our entitlement disease is really to embrace God's grace. James 1:17 reminds us that every good thing given and every perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shifting shadow. Everything that we have is a gift from God. That is God's grace upon us. Then 2 Corinthians 9:8 says, "And God is able to make all grace abound to you, so that always, having all sufficiency in everything, you may have an abundance for every good deed." See, the context of this verse is about giving offering to the work of God. His grace gives us sufficiency, it is in our sufficiency that we're able to give generously to the work of God. That's what it's saying here. Now, I don't know if you have noticed this pattern in your life, but the more you indulge into the lust of the eyes, the stingier you become in your giving. But conversely, the more we realize how much grace we have received from God, the more sufficient we feel and the more generous we become in our giving. Isn't that true? We want to finish well in our spiritual race set before us. We must embrace God's love, and we must embrace God's love and God's grace. Finally, the pride of life will not satisfy us. God's mercy will. So embrace God's mercy rather than try to satisfy the pride of life. As we continue in our story of Samson, the rest of chapter 14 and Chapter 15 are essentially a series of escalating and deadly events, all driven by pride. Provocation leading to violent retribution, one after another. A wedding turns into, let's see who has, you know, the bigger brain. Let's see who is more cunning, and resulting into deadly violence. What was supposed to be a honeymoon turns into, let's see who is more cruel. Setting foxes on fire, fields on fire, burning father and daughter alive. Let's see who is more cruel. And again, resulting into deadly violence. And the irony is in chapter 15, verse 7, when Samson said, since you act like this, I will surely take revenge on you, but after that, I will quit. Samson, don't you know, when pride is the driving factor, no one can quit. It only escalates until it destroys and ruins you. That's the promises of Proverbs, right? Pride goes before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall. In fact, this is true for indulging into the lust of the flesh and eyes as well. How many of us have said this before? Just one more time, and then I'll quit. Just one more time. And I'll quit. Well, God did use Samson, despite his pride, to bring about some deliverance for Israel. Can you imagine how much more Samson could have accomplished for God if he had been humble before God? His conversation with God after he had killed 1,000 Philistines with just the jawbone of a donkey reeks of pride. Verse 18, then he became very thirsty and he called to the Lord and said, you have given this great deliverance by the hand of your servant. And now, shall I die of thirst and fall into the hands of the uncircumcised? You know, you can just hear the arrogance in the tone. You just use my hand to bring this great deliverance. And the entitlement in his question, what, you're just going to let me die of thirst? God's anointing upon him and God's gift of extraordinary strength led Samson to think that he was invincible, untouchable. He didn't feel like he was accountable to anyone. He deserved to have his needs met. God owed him. Is that what happened to Hybel? Is that what happened to Zacharias? They were truly, truly anointed and gifted with extraordinary gifts. Now, before you leave thinking, good thing I'm not that anointed and I'm not that gifted, you know, I'm safe from the traps of pride. Be aware that if you let your guards down, pride will not spare you. The rich have their pride, and so do the poor. The strong have their pride, and so do the weak. The old have their pride, and so do the young. The men have their pride, and so do the women. In fact, even if you have nothing, you could be proud of the fact that you have nothing, right? I'm telling you, pride is so subtle. It just sneaks up on you, and before you know it, you're steeped in it. Now, obviously, I don't have any experience with that because, you know, unlike most people, I am immune to pride. I'm just kidding, you know that, right? Brothers and sisters, do not give in to the pride of life. Beg God for mercy. Pray that God will protect your heart from pride. Pray that God will spare you from becoming entitled. Beg God for his mercy. Know that everything that you have that is good, it is from God. By grace alone, it is a gift from him. So don't abuse Don't abuse it to satisfy your own lust, the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes. Don't let it become your source of pride. Boast in the Lord in what you have or what you do not. Don't boast in what you have or what you don't have, but boast in the Lord. Embrace God's mercy rather than try to satisfy the pride of life. Embrace God's love. Embrace His grace. Embrace His mercy. Then you will be fulfilled and you will finish your race. Pray with me. Father, as we stand or sit before you, thank you for your word and for the story of Samson. And if we were to stop his story here today, it would be such a tragic story. Such a tragic story. And Lord, as our story is being written, and for many of us, it has just begun. Our story of faith has just begun. Lord, I pray for your mercy upon us. Help us so that when our story, my story is finished, that Lord, at the same time, I would have finished the race and I would have done well, and that you would call me good and faithful servant. So have mercy upon us. As we sit here before you, Lord, I pray that you would anoint each and every one of us, call us, Father, you have called us into your kingdom to serve you. And you have given each one of us gifts to varying degrees, some of us more than others, but all of us have gifts. Some of us have extraordinary gifts. Have mercy upon us, that we would not use it to satisfy our own lust, but that we would use it, Father, for your glory, to bring about your purposes and your will in our lives. That's my prayer for myself, and Lord, that's my prayer for each and every one of us here today. Thank you. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.